Very good. I want to continue today with some of the themes that Jesus is bringing out in the Gospels. And you know, over the past little bit, we've looked at some very interesting things. Last week, we were looking at what it was to invest as Jesus invested, what portions of your life you would invest into what he's asking you to pursue, and how you would invest spiritually as well as relationally, and then physically, and then intellectually, and then finally financially. We looked at all that, and that all goes into a vehicle, a means, a way of doing that. And that's what I want to look at today. What is the way of doing that, the means that we can make sure that our investment actually has some return, particularly in the church, when we invest a lot of time and a lot of energy into the things that we do together, we want to see a return on that. So how does that work? And I found that embedded in what Jesus was saying today when he says, he who receives you receives me. So there's a way to be receivable. And that's what we want to look at. Now, you will recall that last year, a year ago, right now, one of the things we were looking at for an extended period of time was what happens with you when you invite someone you know to worship. And we made a list, you may recall, of different things within us that raise some resistance. You know, we don't want to lose a friend, don't know anybody, everybody I know goes to church and all that. Do you recall that? Oh, excellent. That's good. Not too deeply, I see, but that's all right. That's why I reminded you. So one of the things that we began to see was that each one of those pieces of resistance was something that God wanted to do within your life. There was something about that resistance that he wanted to redeem, restore, and transform, and then move us to be more and more like Jesus. And one of the things that we heard quite a bit, and I still do quite a bit, is I can't invite anybody to church because everybody I know already goes to church. And I think, well, there's an upside to that. And the upside is the day of competing with other denominations is gone. It's absolutely gone. It couldn't have come soon enough. Competing with other churches, saying we're better than them, we've got a better program, we've got a better this, a better that. Well, maybe a better preacher, but you know, that's right. that's just gone as well it should be gone. That came from another period of history altogether and lingered for hundreds of years in a way that really became harmful. And we share so much more with other Christians than we have differences with. And most of those differences are choices, almost preferences. So that is really the upside. It really helps our witness in the community as well, to be good friends and supportive of other churches as they would be of us. The downside of it is that if everyone you know goes to church, you probably have a decreasing network of relationships. And you may have to do a little work to get some new friends. I don't know, something, hang out somewhere. The firehouse is a good place, for example, on Friday nights. Whenever, many opportunities. So you get the idea. There's that downside is really an opportunity. And the opportunity is for us to become, if you will, receivable. He who receives you receives me. The one who receives you receives Jesus. And there are some particular and specific ways that that works. And one of the ways that it doesn't work is the one that usually presses our resistance buttons. And the foundation of us resisting, inviting people, sharing our faith is, I have to do it all by myself. Well, no, you don't. In fact, that doesn't really work too well. In fact, it really doesn't work at all, actually, right? Because what we are sharing from and inviting people into is not only a set of ideas, asking them to agree, but a lifestyle of relating with other people, into a family, if you will, of relating to other people. That's very, very significant and important. And when we begin to grasp that and begin to see how what we have is receivable by others, by that vehicle, by that means, then a lot of opportunities start opening up that we may not have seen before. Now, I want to just describe one other item before we get into how that family on mission, if you will, works. And it's this. It is very easy to think that people are saying the church is dying. Some of you may think that I'm saying that, which I'm not. Because if it were dying, I would run the other way as fast as I could. But I'm not. I want to stick with it through all my days. You may have seen other reports and just picked up other things that say the church is diminishing, decreasing. You may have heard other people mock the church, people you know, perhaps. Who knows? And it's very easy to start thinking, well, the church is dying. And I just want you to know the church is not dying. The church will never die. We're the bride of Christ. We're his body. We're the one bought with the price of his own blood. We're not going to die. The church simply will not die. What has died is Christendom. And that may not be a familiar word to you. You may know that a little better as the Judeo-Christian culture that permeated the U.S., all of North America, quite a bit of Europe. That Judeo-Christian culture, Christendom, if you will, has died. It's been dead for some time. The components of that are that Christian ideas are everywhere. Everywhere you go, there are Christian ideas. And you know, from your own experience, probably even from yesterday, Christian ideas are not everywhere you go anymore. One of the implications of that was you could go anywhere and just bump into some kind of Christian thought pattern. So witnessing wasn't really not necessary because it's all over the place anyway. Another thing that that meant was that the church had numerous allies in the culture with Christian formation that you could consider doing a limited kind of presentation of the gospel or the Christian life in a church because it was everywhere. It was just everywhere. That's the way that it was. And that is also no longer the case. There are people living right very close to here, right on this road and other places around that we know and frequent, who if they were to come in here and try to join in with what we were doing, would have absolutely no idea what's going on. None. Absolutely none. They'd look at us and say, what is this? They would have never seen anything like this. And they live here, right here. The other day, I walked into a new dentist's office dressed like this with my collar on. And I'd never seen any of those people before. And no one said anything about, what church are you at? Nothing. What does that mean? It means it doesn't matter. It does not matter in our culture because Christendom is dead. Not us, but Christendom. So, all of the structures that we built around the idea that there's a culture ready and in fact is as Christian as we are, all those structures no longer have any effect. And they are not receivable by those we come in contact with. You and I, however, are receivable by them. We are good at making relationships. We do want to have friends. In fact, we have friends. And we will have more friends as we go along. The manner in which the gospel becomes receivable is what Paul called in the book of Acts, house to house. We tend to think because of the curse of the model, which, let me just remind you one more time, is dead. Never to be resurrected, I don't think. We'll never see it again. The model in our minds is you have to do it one-to-one. And then they do it one-to-one. And then hopefully their friend invites somebody one-to-one. And that is not what we see in the New Testament. That is not how churches have grown historically outside of that Christendom structure. And it has been house to house. Now, a house in the New Testament, when you come across that word, that was the blood relatives, the servants or employees of the business, which were all under that roof as well, the clients or customers or whatever the kind of business it was, and the other stakeholders and supporters of that particular group, and then whatever loose aggregate of friends may have been hanging around them. That was a house. When that house came under the rule of Christ, like Lydia's house in Philippi, you may recall her. She was a seller of purple. Right away, you get the picture. Here's a business of someone selling purple, and there'd be all of her blood ties, all of her servants, all of her employees, all of her customers, and all of the aggregate of friends who just like hanging around her. That whole house, that day they met Paul, became a Christian household. House to house, what happened was that house began relating to the other houses that they had to do business with. We would call them businesses today. That one business who needs another business to function. The relationship between from house to house carried the gospel in one way or another. Whatever was appropriate between those two groups. And then it was those two groups that then began to build the church in that city. And then from house to house, the church was built and grew throughout that region. Very different from the way that we perceive how that happens. Yet that was the main way that it went on. And what we tend to do is then move ahead a little bit further and start thinking, well, okay, yeah, that sounds good. All right, I see Christendom's dead. We're not. Excellent. That's great. I'm ready to go. So I move into discipleship. And often what happens is we take a picture of discipleship, which is still individual. I need to do my discipleship practice so that I can become the disciple Jesus wants me to be, so that I can do the things with the individuals that Jesus wants me to do with. See, it's still one-on-one. Very easy to move that way. What we see in the sweep of the New Testament is when Jesus is at the ascension, he's sending them out throughout the world. He's already told them, go and make disciples. By the time you get to Acts 20 or so, not a very long period of time, making disciples as a phrase has dropped out of the New Testament and house to house has replaced it. The reason for that is disciples are not made one-on-one. They're made house to house. The disciple-making function was implied in the text of the scriptures we read it from in the house-to-house idea. So, here you are. You have a household like Lydia's. They've become Christian. They've all ready to go. They've got the Apostle Paul there for a little bit, off to a great start, and they start dealing with their suppliers. And their suppliers say, look at them, they say, what changed with you? And then the head of that household, which is a supplying business, begins to see it. And the whole household comes. And then the ones who have a traveling business, if you will, they come up to Lydia to buy purple to resell it somewhere in some other country probably. And they notice what's happening there in that household. And they say, what's happened here? And what's being projected is not gospel tracts, you know, at the doorway, to give up big Bible verses along the wall. There's none of that, I don't think. There may have been some Christian symbols hanging up. And sometimes that was for when the persecution began to get pretty heavy. There'd be secret symbols that we know, like the fish or whatever, people would come there. But what would be portraying the Christian faith would be the lifestyle of the household members. And in fact, the entire ethos of that house. Something would have been different about it. Something more respectful towards the people they deal with, the houses they dealt with, would have been increasing along the way. And there may have been someone in that house who, before that household came to follow Jesus, may have been overcharging or something, and everybody knew it, but you couldn't get around it. Now that's stopped. What happened? Or they may have found that there's more little girls hanging around that household. Why is that? Little girls were often left to die on the roadside in that culture, in the Roman Empire. And it was the Christians who got them, brought them home, raised them. Things like that were happening all the time. And people would notice, what's happened with your house? Now, what goes on in this kind of receivable situation is that when a group, if you will, from the church, maybe a group from among us, begins to be received by a group outside of us, that group outside of us is beginning to receive Jesus. Simply by receiving one of our groups. The doors open. Things start flowing. The relationship takes on a nature that would be different from all the other relationships. The group from us that is beginning to serve and be interested in the group outside of us presents something no one else presents. And the group outside of us starts receiving something no one else offers. And it's a group together that does it. That's the house-to-house function. That's how things would happen among us now in some way. Groups from among us would relate deeply or well to groups outside of us. And the gospel would spread that way. The instruments of peace would multiply that way. Do you see how that goes? Now that is very different, and I find much more encouraging than doing it one-on-one. Because if I do it one-on-one, it's going to be a really short period of time where the only people I actually do know who want to know me are the ones who are already going to church. Because I have no other way of describing what it is to follow Jesus than debating them. Or trying not to debate them. Or whatever it may be. And that does not really convey the gospel in a way that other people may be looking at it. Because most of the people, you and I included, out of our culture, are choosers. And we get to choose what we want to do. We get to choose where we want to go. We get to choose who we want to be with. We get to choose just about almost everything that happens to us. Little different than being a consumer. A consumer is a very self-centered, narcissistic kind of approach to life where everything is for me. That person's a little harder to deal with. But if somebody everybody meets a chooser and somebody wants to choose something, they're just ready to choose because that's what we do. And they see what you and your group has. And they start getting thirsty for that. Then things start multiplying. Which, as you recall, is different from addition. All right. That, I think, is the way to go. That is what will open up to us things that are not open to anyone else. I also very strongly believe that for you to be investing as Jesus invested means that you would invest spiritually first into a group that is serving a group outside of us. And so you would invest spiritually with praying about it. You would invest relationally by spending time perhaps with some others who have the same kind of desire for that same kind of person or that group that's outside of us. And then you begin physically spending some time and then intellectually thinking, asking God show you what to do, how that works. And then maybe financially, I don't know, go bowling. I don't know. It's just something. It probably cost you something to do, keep it going, but that's how that works. That also is the answer to the prayer that was offered every week in this room from 2011 through 2013, that God would ignite the evangelistic ministry of St. Francis. It would be ignited that way. It would be an answer to that prayer that begins bearing fruit. It is dry tinder that has a flame already going, coming next to some other dry tinder, house to house, group to group. I mean, haven't you sometimes used a whole box of one match after another trying to light something? Whole big thing, a dry tinder, a flame, comes next to another one. Yeah. It's the answer to that prayer. Now, what I want to encourage you to be thinking about is this. What is God telling you about house to house? Is there a house outside of St. Francis, a group like that, that you are concerned about, drawn to, love, want to see restored in some way, transformed? Why would he be telling you that? Maybe there's some other people who have the same one. And then the house inside of us would be that the people with the same desire, the same focus. That becomes a house to a house. That's how the gospel will go. And now if it helps you, you can call that your gospel posse if you like. Just off you go to the other ones. You don't have to do that if it's bothersome, but you get the idea. What's God telling you about that? What would he want you to do about that? What step would he want you to take? And just what does he want you to invest? Is the first thing to invest spiritually. If you just have a place in your heart for a group, some group out there, maybe the first thing is to invest spiritually by praying for them, writing their names down, something. Drive by where they all meet and give them a drive-by prayer, something, whatever it is, whatever God asks you to do spiritually. That will open the doors for the rest of the investment that you might want to make. All right. Think about it. Pray about it. See what God opens up. Call me if you want. That's what I've just described is what opens the door between this spot and the community. Let's stand. Lord Jesus, we thank you for everyone we know here who comes around this table. We thank you for the ones who will be joining us in the future. We thank you for the ones that we know from other places in the church who share this faith. We ask that you would draw us together so that we may go house to house and the way your apostles did. That you would increase that in the evangelistic ministry we prayed for. We begin to bear the fruit that you desire. And we ask that today for the glory of your name. Amen.